Some things, if you carry around with you in life, they'll just either weigh you down or they could hurt or maim you. Sometimes you just have to learn in life how to bury the hatchet. At least that's part of what I had to learn in my journey. My name's Joseph. I'm just an average Joe in actually many ways. I came from a dysfunctional family. I was misunderstood, wrongly accused. I was hurt by those closest to me. I had big dreams, and there were a lot of detours and twists and turns en route to the destination. I'm just an average Joe, maybe like many of you. But I learned some things in this average Joe journey that if you don't learn to let things go, then you're going to carry around some needless weight or threaten hacking yourself up in some way or hacking those around you. And so you got to learn as an average Joe how to let go. And so I'd like to share you a little bit about that story, about my journey of how to learn to let go. I mentioned a moment ago that I came from a dysfunctional family. That might surprise many of you. My great-grandpa was Abraham, my grandfather was Isaac, my dad was Jacob. Those three are kind of known for this godly family tree through Scripture, and yet the truth about that godly tree is that all of our tree trunks, our family trees, come with some twists and knots along the way. And Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob were no different. As a matter of fact, Abraham had a problem with a servant and some brother interactions between Ishmael and Isaac. Isaac played favorites between his twin sons, Jacob and Esau, and so it's no wonder that my dad, Jacob himself, would start to play favorites with his own kids as well. But that gets mighty complicated when you've got 12 boys to choose and pick a favorite thereof. At first, I didn't mind my dad playing favorites. I was the favorite one. He actually wrapped himself all around me in his love and his care with this richly ornamented robe that he had given me. Colors in my day and age show significance, show riches, show extravagance. And Dad gave me the robe of many colors. Richly and expensive, a reminder to all of my upper brothers that I was the favored one, Joseph. That, as you might suggest, rubbed them the wrong way, right? To be reminded regularly through the outfits that I wore that I was Dad's favorite, not a way to have a family tree, and they resented me for it. Not of my choosing, but just a resentment based on circumstances. I didn't, of course, help the matters any, because you see, I was a teenager with some big dreams in life. As a matter of fact, one dream I had at night was I was in a field. I was a bundle of wheat, and there were 11 other bundles of wheat around me. Only those 11 other bundles of wheat bowed down to my bundle of wheat. 11 brothers bowing to your average Joe, huh? It didn't help matters when I told them, and they resented me all the more. The robe and now the dreams. Well, I really didn't help it when a couple nights later, I had another one of those dreams. The first one we could have marked off for just eating Wheaties before bed, but then I remembered who eats Wheaties before bedtime. Why am I dreaming of wheat and Wheaties and all of this conglomerated together? And so the next dream had nothing to do with the Wheaties, but in the stars in the sky. Once again, 12 stars. Only 11 of them bowed to my star, and even the sun and the moon, Mom and Dad, bowed to my star as well. And so when the breakfast table came around that next morning and Dad said, "How was the night's sleep, boys?" I had to share once again my dream. And my brothers hated me all the more. As a matter of fact, they couldn't say one kind word to me or about me. Can you imagine that for a household? 11 siblings can't say one kind thing to you. It was that setting in that home, a dysfunctional home, that I grew up in. What can I say? I was a teenager with a lot of dreams. Is it wrong to dream? I just didn't realize how many twists and turns there would take route in fulfillment of those dreams. And one of those twists actually came soon after that last dream of the stars in the sky and the sun and the moon in that way. Dad sent me away on business. My brothers were already out in the fields. You'll remember my dad inherited quite the inheritance. Abraham, I think you met him before. Business was good to Abraham. And he passed the business to Isaac, and Isaac made it flourish even more to the point where my dad, Jacob, was really thriving. He had the big business going, and he had the field hands, 11 brothers, to help further propagate that business portfolio that he was growing. And so my brothers were in a nearby town on business. I was kept close to Dad, the favored one, remember. Administration was my thing, and so I stayed close to Dad with the oversight, the administration, while my brothers were cracking a sweat and out in the fields. When Dad sent me one day and said, I'm sending you to your brothers. Go to your brothers there, Joseph, and bring back word how's business doing in their neck of the region. And so I went. Followed my dad's orders, and I went to the place where my brothers were at the business. The problem being, they saw me before I saw them. They saw me from a distance. And what they could really conjure up as they saw me from a distance wasn't those kind words, right? Remember, they couldn't say one kind word about me. Instead, they plotted, how might we kill this dreamer? And so they hatched a plan upon my arrival to first kill me in cold blood. Imagine that. Your brothers wanting a brother dead in cold blood. How much hate and filth and spoil was in my dysfunctional home. They wanted me in cold blood, but one of my brothers, Reuben, the oldest in the birth line, persuaded the 10 others, saying, what do we gain by killing a brother? Let's instead just throw him in a pit, right? Then our hands won't be bloody. Nature will still take its course in this dark place there, and our hands will be clean of it. And so the brothers agreed. They threw me in a pit upon my arrival. I could not bring back word to my father. They tossed me in a pit, and they went to have lunch. For a while, I stayed in the pit. That's going to be a common place for me. Dark places, a pit, kind of an existence. I was in the pit while they ate lunch when I heard in the distance some slave traders coming, Ishmaelites, coming from the land of Midian and heading to Egypt with some trade of their own, and I could hear the idea ringing in my brother's ears. Why leave them in a pit when we can make a penny off them? They're business-minded folks. Remember, we come from Abraham, and so they, I could hear, decided to make a buck off my life. They decided to pull me from the pit. Good idea, I thought. But to pull me from a pit just to make a penny from me as a slave, bad idea, I thought. As much as I pleaded, as much as I cried, as much as I said the dreams would be over and all that way, they moved forward. They threw me to the slave traders to be carted off to Egypt. They hatched a plan that featured this robe being ripped to shreds and dipped in blood to frame my murder by a savage beast. As they brought back that word, the word I was to bring back to Dad, they brought back with my robe that an animal must have harmed me. And so there I was in Egypt, waking up that morning a favored son, now I'm a slave. Waking up in my father's household, now in a land I've never slept a day in, living under someone's household I've never met a day in my life. Fortunately for me, the household I was penned up in was a man by the name of Potiphar. He was a bigwig in Egypt, actually captain of the guard, a military post, high-ranking official in Egypt. And I didn't have time to carry my hatchet. I thought, what good would it be to carry my hatchet? And so I went right to work. What is this opportunity before me, even in Egypt? I can't go back. This is my state. And so what do I do in the state that I'm in? And so I went to work for Potiphar. I worked as hard as I could for as long as I could, and I soon caught the eye of Potiphar himself, the bigwig in Egypt, captain of the guard, high-ranking official. I caught the eye thereof. He saw administration. He saw some of the skills my father had utilized and refined to be put to work in his work. And so he actually put me in charge of his old household, which did not include his wife, though she was hoping so. I won't go into great details about what went down there, But after a number of years of service into Pharaoh, she hatched a plot to frame me yet again. In my integrity, I was serving Potiphar faithfully. As a teenager, even in the heat of the maybe even mid-20s in that way, and yet Potiphar's wife's and advances, I resisted to the point where I even fled from some foul situations that later got me framed. Framed. She used, of all things, a robe of mine. Not this robe. That one was torn to shreds and dipped in blood. But a robe that I was wearing that Potiphar had given me, she used as a frame job, falsely accusing me. That landed me in my next twist and turn, another hatchet that I could have carried that I had to learn how to bury. And that is that I was sent to prison. Prison warden's care for a crime I had never committed. Another twist and turn. Just when I thought life was going better and the brakes were looking up, I'm in prison, another dark place in my life. Yet again, what do you do when you're in dark places in life? I resolved to do the next right thing. What was the right course of action to take in prison? I just simply went to work and tried to do my best, even in prison of all places. Just do your best. And so I was doing my best in prison, and once again, my best was noticed, this time by the prison warden, who put me in charge and promoted me yet again like Potiphar did, yet again like my father did. He promoted me in prison to take care of the other inmates and to see the order and administration of the whole prison guard. And so in the course of those duties, I got to meet some people that for whatever reason were in these circumstances and in these walls, and two of which were coming from Pharaoh's own household. Pharaoh's like the president of my land, if you don't know. He's the one in charge over all of Egypt, and Pharaoh disdained two of his workers for some reason that we won't get into. One of them was the chief baker, the other of them the chief cupbearer. He held his drink, the other held the breads, and both were thrown in my prison under my care. I noticed one day when I was making my rounds that they were upset. Upset even more than usual in the place that I worked. And so I simply asked them. Amidst my daily duties and daily tasks, I took time to notice people. And in that noticing of people, I asked them, why are you upset? Why are you so dejected? Why are you upset right now and right today that's different than yesterday? And what they shared with me is they both had dreams. I felt a little shiver from my past. Dreams, yet again? They had dreams the night before, and they were confused and conflicted about it. In the course of conversation, I was able to clarify some of their dreaming that they had. The chief baker, let's just say, baked his last donut. And the chief cupbearer was going to be promoted back into Pharaoh's palace. I told them, if that comes true, you remember me in my state. And sure enough, Pharaoh had a birthday a couple days later. The chief baker didn't bake that cake, let's just say. The chief cupbearer, he was back handing the cup to Pharaoh's hand. Just one problem. He forgot my reference. For 2 whole years, he stood in Pharaoh's palace and forgot to put a kind word in to someone misguided, mistreated, misjudged into prison itself. 2 years! That might not sound like long for you. That's 730 days. And some days in some states feel a lot longer than others. For 730 days, I kept waking up and wondering, is my break ever going to come? Or is this just what it is? When all of a sudden, Pharaoh starts having some dreams. Some dreams! Pharaoh's dreams were of fields yet again. Wheat, 7 big, plump, healthy-looking wheat that were eaten up by 7 skinny, deathly, mildewy-looking grains of wheat. He woke up, dreamed again, this time of cows. 7 plump USDA-approved cattle head eaten up by 7 scrawny famine cows. It was one of those dreams you just don't easily shake. And Pharaoh was struggling to shake these dreams. When he's asking those in his inner circle, what do these dreams mean? That clicks the light bulb finally for the chief cupbearer to say, I once in my life had a dream that was confused and dejected by that there was a man in prison who was able to help me out. Maybe you can call him. Maybe he can help you out. And so sure enough, Pharaoh does just that. He calls me from prison. He puts on new clothes. He shaves my face and he tells me his dreams and says, I heard you're the man that can have the answer for this moment. Now was my moment. Finally, speaking face to face to the most powerful person in my region, an area of dreams, something I could recall from my teenage years. Now was my moment. And yet what I said in that moment was, Pharaoh, the power doesn't rest in me. The power rests in thee. If it's God's will, God's revealing something to you about it, that maybe he's going to use me as an instrument to share. But Pharaoh, you got your eyes on the wrong one. Our eyes need to be on thee, not on me. And with that, I was able to tell Pharaoh his dream. The 7 plump heads of wheat and the 7 plump cows were both of the same dream. It was 7 years of prosperity that was coming that I was warning Pharaoh about and heeding the instruction. But I said, Pharaoh, in those 7 years of prosperity, be mindful because there's 7 lean years, 7 skinny cows, 7 years of famine that's awaiting on the other side. As I'm telling Pharaoh the meaning of his dream, I notice he's doing some calculating in the back of his mind. And he sees in me an aptitude, a vision, an administration to lead during these 7 years of prosperity and 7 years of famine. And so by the end of it, I tell Pharaoh what the dream means, and he tells me, I want to promote you. Second in command in Egypt. Second in command! An average Joe! From the promised land that's relocated as a servant into Egypt, now promoted to Pharaoh's right-hand man. It was a deal better than I could refuse. What, was I going to go back to prison? No. And so I told Pharaoh yes. And I led Egypt alongside Pharaoh through those 7 years of prosperity and into those 7 years of famine. That brings me back to the big hatchet. It was about a decade later. 7 years of prosperity had already ended. We were in the thick of the famine. And the famine wasn't just in Egypt, it was in the whole region. Which often made me wonder, how's my family doing in the midst of this famine? How are my brothers? Is my father even still alive? What has changed in all these decades since I was last with them? I often played through my mind, what would it be like to meet once again my father and my brothers? When in the middle of the famine, guess who arrived in Pharaoh's doorstep asking to buy food for their food shortage that they were going through? 10 of my brothers came walking in. This time, the tables were turned. This time, I saw them coming from a distance, and they didn't recognize me. They weren't expecting the second in command to be their little brother. And I had changed a lot in the decades prior. I was in Egyptian garb and looking more like an Egyptian and less like their 17-year-old acne-faced brother that they last sold into slavery. And so here they come into my presence bowing. Bowing. Did you hear that? You remember those dreams back in the day of wheat and stars in the sky bowing to this sheaf? See, they weren't dreams that were just good thoughts in my mind. They were God-given dreams of what he was revealing the future would hold. And here they were, bowing right before me. Now was my opportunity, right? All the harm that they had done, it could be their chance. It could be their journey. But truthfully, I wouldn't be able to be where I am today if I kept carrying this hatchet around. I learned years before they even showed up on that doorstep how to bury that hatchet. I had 2 kids in Egypt. After the prison incident, Pharaoh had hooked me up with a wife and bore 2 children, and I named those children Manasseh and Ephraim. Manasseh means forget, Ephraim means fruitful. They weren't just names. I was writing my journey into my kids' lives there, pointing them how I was able to forget what the harm was done to me in the past and to move forward fruitfully in the future. And so when my brothers arrived that day, there were some matters we had to work out, and it was a journey. As a matter of fact, multiple chapters will be penned about working it out. But the thing that we were working out was not forgiveness. It was reunion. It was, can I trust my brothers yet again? I buried the hatchet long ago. Now the question was, do they come bringing another hatchet in their hands, or can they be trusted? And through a series of tests, I found my brothers could be trusted. They came to Egypt. They brought Dad to Egypt. I provided for them. I told them who I was. I was able to be there at my father's passing, and the last chapters of our story of our family dysfunction was blessing rather than cursing. From not being able to say a kind word previously to now kindness being expressed in care and concern, what's the change? What could do all this? Well, I told you. You're right. I told you, a part of my name is I'm an average Joe, Joseph. Do you know what Joseph means? The Lord adds. Only God can add some things into life, like forgiveness that's genuine and deep, that can repair even dysfunctional families like I was in. My name is Joseph. The Lord adds. To God be the glory, and to God belongs all hatchet burying. Amen? Amen. Thank you, Morgan. I do want to have a conversation, as we've had throughout all of these different characters of Scripture, and that is just a chance to dialogue about them. That first question, as always, is the open question really for you to take it where you want to take it. What did you observe? What question would you have? What comment would you give? What have you never really thought about until thinking about it in this way with the life of Joseph? Open-ended, you take it where you want it, and everyone is free game in this because I was gone last week, and so the list has been cleared since then. Anyone question, comment before I start funneling us along in some other discussion, dialogue, questions? Be careful for what's waiting. This is your chance, huh? You're going in it. Okay. Here's the question I would have for you guys. Let's just tease out a little bit more of Joseph real quick. What did you notice were some real strengths of Joseph's character, and what were some weak points of Joseph's character? Let's dialogue. Just potpourri it out. Shout it out there if you would. What do we notice about Joseph that would be a strength of his life? What would be a weakness of his life? Forgiveness, obviously, right? I don't think we can read the story of Joseph without thinking forgiveness in some way, shape, or form. We're going to concentrate on how to forgive and what is forgiveness a little bit later on. But yes, forgiveness is definitely a key feature. Hard worker, Cheryl. He's a hard worker. I think that's the case for even his brothers in this case as well. They're out in the fields. He's in administration. But how many times is Joseph put in some adverse circumstances where he's just making best of where he's at? Working hard in Potiphar's palace, working hard in the prison precincts, working hard for Pharaoh. That work ethic is a common line that God uses then, right, in a variety of settings. So thank you, Cheryl. Thank you. Others? Hard work, forgiveness, will?
Endurance.
He was a good runner. Different kind of endurance, right? Persevering through some painful points in life from the very beginning. Yes, there was a hand over this way. Mel Genie? He was truth-telling. I didn't get into this too much, but that dream-telling of the chief cupbearer and the chief baker, like one of them, he's got to tell the chief baker, you're going to be killed by Pharaoh. Like, you've offended him so much, I don't know what wrong you did, but your dream reveals that you're going to be killed. And then he's got to tell the chief cupbearer, you're going to be promoted back by Pharaoh. You're going to get your old job back. You're coming back to work for Pharaoh. And Joseph left to deal both those messages to both those individuals. Now I would like talking to the chief cupbearer, right? If I'm in Joseph's shoes, I want to tell the chief cupbearer his message. You're going to get the promotion, man, and when you get promoted, remember me. That's a message I wouldn't mind giving, right? Maybe you would nod your head yes. I wouldn't want to give the message to the chief cupbearer or the chief baker, right? How do you tell someone that, judgment's coming down the pipe? And you don't got long to really calculate, are you ready to meet your maker or not? Joseph's got to deliver both those messages, and both times Joseph doesn't flinch an eye. He deals with both truthfully, which I think is a last grace in the chief baker's mind, right? He's got some time that he realizes, I don't got much time left on earth. I better get my house in order, whatever that looks like, and get right with God, because I'm not going to be right with Pharaoh, huh? How do we deliver both messages when we have to tell the truth in love in both settings there? Joseph's an epitome of that, yes. Mel, you had a hand too? Yes. A weakness, humility, a little prideful in the teenage years. Careful who you share your dreams with, right? Like the brothers react ruffled the first dream. You might not want to go back and tell them you're dreaming the stars and they were bowing down to you too, right? Like show a little filter in all of this maybe in some capacity, and yet pride kind of blows past filters at times. And so, yeah. Is there any other weakness that you see in Joseph besides this pride or humility? Owen? His brothers are a weakness. The family that we inherit, that's a weakness. Are you saying that with brothers in the pew with you there, Owen? Good, yes. I think family in some ways could have been a weakness and could have been a strength as well of his life. Any other weaknesses that you can think of with Joseph? I think that's the hard one, and that's the one that I think I can get at too, is the pride, the who do we share the dreams to, because never is that said that he needs to tell everyone the dreams that God had laid on his life, I don't think, in that kind of way of expressing it. So there seems to be some pride. Good. We won't badger that one too long. We'll move to this next one. What do you notice about the way Joseph handles bad breaks? Would we be in agreement, church family, that Joseph had to endure some pretty hard stuff? I think that's why, Will, you said perseverance, endurance. He had to endure some bad things. Like, he's the favored one growing up. But at age 17, that turns quickly, right? Would we think being sold into a foreign country where you've never been a day in your life is a positive life move? Like, did he choose that for himself? Would we think that getting thrown in a pit, a cistern, a well, that's like a dark, muddy place? Does that sound like the place that we would choose to wake up to and venture into that day we woke up from the place of favor into that? We're in agreement, right? Do we think after crawling your way into this foreign place of Egypt to then be thrown in prison, like you're elevated in Potiphar's household, now you're put in prison because of something Potiphar's wife said about you? Do we think that's a positive life turn? To be put from Potiphar's house to prison? Are we in agreement there too? Help me out. No, I'm from a distance here, but give me something there, right? Another change of direction. Do we think living in the wait, like 2 years of waiting, when you know it's just one reference away that maybe you're on the get out of jail free card, do we think 730 days of the clock ticking, 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 and you're just watching, 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 watching? Is it easy to live in the wait? Like, these aren't easy things that Joseph endured, right? And so how does he get through them? How does he get through them? And what do you do on bad days that help you get through as well? Here's where this point gets into a little application. Help us out here. What do you notice about Joseph's story about how he handles bad days? And maybe it's some of which we already covered, but it just needs to be reemphasized. So how does Joseph handle bad days that's helpful for all of us in our bad days? He gets back up, right? That's what impresses me about Joseph's story, is how little he dwells on the bad days. Like, I don't know about you, but when I have bad days, sometimes I just stew in them. I just let them keep racing through my mind, and I let them, you know, weigh me down in the next day. Bad day might be Monday, but here I am in Tuesday. I'm still carrying it around, right? That's what impresses me about Joseph's story. He puts it away. He lets it go, and he lives into then the challenge of this day, not the challenge of yesterday. and makes that an opportunity, actually, that God's going to use later on. So yes, he gets back up. Other ways Joseph handles it. There is that staying force that is God's presence in this. I think you hit on it, nailed on the head there, Joyce. I just want to revisit a couple. Let me help my old age a second, okay? This is some excerpts in Joseph's life's journey. Not the only instances, but in Genesis 39, this is when Joseph is taken to Egypt, when he's first sold into slavery. It says this in verse number 2 of Genesis 39, "The Lord was with Joseph. He prospered. He lived in the house of his Egyptian master. When his master saw that the Lord was with him and gave him success in everything he did, Joseph found favor in the eyes of him and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his whole household. He entrusted everything in the care of what he owned." And so it kind of shows Joseph's journey upwards, starting with the Lord was with Joseph. Yet again, this is when he's put in prison. While Joseph was there in prison, the Lord was with Joseph. You see, every twist and turn that Joseph had in life, from the pit to Potiphar's house to prison, God didn't leave him. It doesn't mean that God spared him from that, right? That's what we want God to do. God, just put the force field over the pit so that when my brothers heave me, I'm like a trampoline, boing, right back out, right? That's what we want God to do. And instead, what God does is he shows up in the pit with us to empower us into actually, here's the real hinchpin in Joseph's story, he's actually leading us closer to the ultimate dream through the pits and Potiphar's in the prisons. You see, each step that felt like a step lower on the rung actually gets Joseph a little bit closer, a little bit closer, a little bit closer to the fulfillment of that dream, right? Where he's working for Pharaoh's household in those brothers do bow before him. It's a weird way to get to the final destination, right? But he's there. We say it in this place. Said it many times before this. We'll say it many times after this. But God always arrives at his final destination. He just rarely takes the turnpike to get there. Did you hear that? You'll hear it 50 more times as long as I'm serving as a pastor here. God always arrives at his final destination. He just rarely takes the turnpike to get there. That is the fastest, most convenient, most quickest route. But by the end of Genesis, final destination has been arrived because of God's presence sustaining through the pits and the prisons and Potiphar's palace and all that. Yes. Any others that you would say about how he reacts to those? The three that I jotted down, two of them were covered. He looks for new opportunities in the bad days even. Maybe God is revealing something in the bad days that we just need to be mindful of. And so Joseph has an eye looking for those things. He does his best where he's at. Not mopes about where he's not at. He does his best where he's at. And then God's presence, of course, is in those pits, like Joyce had just pointed out. Last question for you. Question on forgiveness here. What do we learn about forgiveness through Joseph's story? Someone comes up to you on the street. "I see your cross. You must be a Christian, huh? Do you believe in forgiveness? What is forgiveness and how do I forgive?" Because maybe the average Joe on the street has something he needs to forgive someone with, and he sees that little emblem that you tack on you in some way or shape or form as an emblem of forgiveness. And so they ask that question. You're a Christian. How do you answer, what is forgiveness and how do I forgive? What do you say? And maybe using even Joseph's story as an illustration in that. David? Forgiveness is what Joseph did with them putting him in prison and stuff, and he was able to bury that hatchet, David? Yes, no, agreed, agreed. What else would forgiveness be, and how do we explain that to someone? There's many occasions, like David points out, where he's practicing forgiveness. Bearing the hatchet. Anything we would add to that? Linnell. Yes. That was pointed out in our Thursday evening service. We do something similar. It's a little different there, but we have some dialogue points. And this was one of the questions we dialogued about. And one of the individuals, like Linnell expressed, says, forgiveness in aspect is for us. It frees us, right? And so that we can move forward and learning to let go in that. Yes, I would agree with that, Linnell. Any others? What is forgiveness? How do we do it? Kathy? So we can forgive even if we never meet that individual again, correct? Based on Joseph's story, he did, of course, then get to meet the individuals, but I think this is important because some of us come around bearing hatchets, having hatchets of people who did us wrong who's no longer in the picture, right? They're dead, but the memory or what they did to us still ekes us and aches us. Can we forgive them even when they're out of the picture? Kathy would say yes, and Joseph had to learn how to do that, not knowing if he's ever going to see his brothers again or not, if they were even alive or not. Of course, they ended up being that. So yes, I would agree. I would just share three things about forgiveness there that I think is important to keep in mind. Forgiveness is not forgetfulness. I know we have that cliche that's not in the Bible, that's in popular jargon, forgive and forget. You don't see that in Joseph's story. He never completely forgets what's been done from him. He just chooses not to live in light of what has been done from him. That's a big difference, right? The reality remains, and Joseph's aware of that, and if you read more of the latter part of Joseph's story, you would realize how it's never ultimately been forgotten in that sense, but it's been forgotten in the sense where he's not retaliating or he's not living today in light of yesterday. That's important to keep in mind what forgiveness is and what forgiveness is not. You don't forget it, but you don't live in light of what's been done, as in a retaliating. Joseph's not retaliating. He's not selling his brothers into slavery like they had done to him. Second thing, there is a difference between forgiveness and reconciliation. Sometimes we use those words interchangeably because they're close cousins, but they're not exactly the same, okay? Forgiveness has to do with me releasing the burden that I bear. And so I think it's more in line with what Linnell was saying. It helps me out in that way of bearing the hatchet so I don't come just carrying an axe the rest of my life in that way. Reconciliation is where the parties actually now come together. They're reunited. They're reconciled. And from Genesis 42 onwards, the question is reconciliation, not forgiveness. Joseph's wondering, can I have a future now with my brothers and my family? Or if I allow them back in my life, are they just going to repeat the hurt and the harm that they had done decades prior? There is a difference there. You can forgive someone without having that close interaction, because reconciliation, this is what reconciliation takes, a two-way street. Forgiveness is the action of the individual. Reconciliation takes two parties coming together. And so that's why there's a series of tests from Genesis 42 onwards where Joseph is testing, have my brothers changed, or do they still come carrying their hatchet, wanting to hurt and maim me? And what he finds through those tests is that his brothers changed. They're as haunted by the past as what he was, and they're desiring to come clean in that way too. So keep that in mind. I think that's so important to keep in mind. Forgiveness, reconciliation, if you are suffering abuse in some way from some individual, you need to forgive them. I know that sounds strong-handed in any which way there, but we are Christians of a forgiven people that realize we've been forgiven, and so we extend it. And Jesus actually says it harshly, right? He teaches a prayer, Father, forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. And when he's reading that in Mark's gospel, right after that prayer, he says, you don't forgive someone, you're not forgiven. That's harsh. That's blunt. That's bottom line. Forgiveness is what we are in God's sight and what we need to extend to others. With that said, though, if you've been hurt, if you've been abused, if you've got something to forgive, you need to forgive them. But that doesn't mean you reconcile to them. If the abuser is still an abuser, then your forgiveness doesn't look like sitting in their presence and giving them a punching bag in that room. There's a difference there between reconciliation and forgiveness. Forgiveness is the ability to move forward. You've done me harm. I'm not going to harm you back. But that doesn't mean I'm putting myself back in this position to be your punching bag yet again. You seeing the difference between that? Maybe that's a dialogue point that we need to have person to person in that way. But there is a biblical distinction between forgiveness and reconciliation. Forgiveness, not an option. Reconciliation is an option. Lastly, forgiveness is divine. That's a cliche that's at the heartbeat of what the Bible says. We can't, I don't truly believe, forgive someone truthfully unless we've tasted the forgiveness of God and unless he helps us walk through that journey of forgiving others. I'll illustrate it through the cross. Jesus is hanging on the cross. One of his seven last words is, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they're doing." How do you pray that? Like, let's not pretend the cross is just some cute moment, okay? This is a man that's bleeding out of every open wound of his life. His central nervous system is shooting pain through his nerves and his body. He's laboring to take each and every breath as his heart is filling up and his lungs filling up with liquid to the point where he's going to have congested heart failure in a matter of moments. And he's praying in this state to those individuals who put him there, "Father, forgive them." How does he do it? I mean, if you don't think Jesus is divine, then you need to relook the cross yet again at even uttering those simple words. How does he do it? Because here is God extending forgiveness to sinners like you and me. And so do you think God knows how to offer and lead us in a journey of forgiving those who have sinned against us? That's why we need to get to know Jesus more and more and inch closer and closer to him, because as we do, he's going to enable us to do some things that we don't have the power in our natural ability to do, like forgiveness. Forgiveness is not natural. It's natural to want revenge, to want hate, to blast those who blasted you. It's divine when you're able to treat that individual kindly, meet their needs even when they've taken from you, like Joseph did to his brothers who threw him in a pit and ushered him into slavery, and how he ushers them to Egypt and provides for them in the midst of famine. That's divine. That's a working of God in Joseph's life. Make sense? Amen? I'll close it there. Good.